hello again, Turdville. It is another Thursday, this time the 9th of July, I guess. And it's time for another Access to Access webinar. There is so much going on in the world, from everything that's going on in Greece to the Chinese stock market melting down, and now the Chi-Coms have made all selling illegal, to corruption and, oh my gosh, it's just the world is just, it's just madness here in the summer of 2015. And I thought if there's anybody that can deal with the madness and put it into English for us, it's Bill Holter. Many of you are familiar with Bill from all of his internet work, his columns at Miles Franklin, and now his new partnership with Santa himself, Jim Sinclair. And so I thought, well, let's bring Bill in and let's have some fun. So with that, Bill, thank you for coming on into Turdville and welcome back. And how are you doing this morning?
My pleasure, Turd. I'm doing well.
And don't worry, you can call me Craig too. It's up to you. You can call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner. Anyway, I alluded to this briefly, and I think most everybody knows this now. If they're a religious follower of your work and reading your columns that appear almost every day, they know that you're now working with Jim Sinclair and his JS Mindset site. You want to just take a second and explain to everybody how that came about and again, how they can find you?
Well, you can go to www.jsmindset, that's M-I-N-E, set. That website's been around for, close to 15 years.
First one I ever found. Yeah, that's the first site I ever found when I began to wake up in 2008.
Yeah, and that started in 2002. So it's been for quite a while. And Jim and I are going back and forth as to what this is going to look like in the future. He's not been writing much in the last 6-8 months, almost a year now. He's been focusing primarily on getting his mine in Tanzania up and running. Our thought process is sometime later this year we'll be doing some seminars and conferences, and very possibly we're going to become a dual site where there's a free side to the site and a pay side to the site. Not to worry, it's not going to be hugely expensive, maybe $100 a year, we're not sure. But as long as we get bashed by trolls, anybody who wants to troll us should at least pay the price of admission.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
That's
where it stands right now. It's still up in the air, but I'm truly, truly enjoying working with Jim. I'm talking to him a couple, three times a day. He's a brilliant guy. I, in the past, have had an incredible mentor, and between the two of those, I mean, I get to bounce ideas off of him, and if it's crazy, they tell me, and if it's not, they scratch their head and say, yeah, that's you might be onto something there. So it's a dream come true for me because he's a brilliant guy.
He sure is. And everybody here at TFMR knows how much I think of Jim. I've never actually met him. We've just corresponded over the years by email. And I've always just thought, actually, there was a time where my email address ended up on like his personal, like, circle of friends and family email. So I was getting all these pictures all the time of his farm and his his lake and his ducks and
his all this cars.
Yeah. But it was the first site I ever found. My brother-in-law, the colonel, told me all about it in whatever it was, 2007 or 8. And I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but when I first decided after and was convinced to do it by the folks, the regulars at Zero Hedge, to start my Blogspot site back in 2010, that day I emailed Jim and said, well, here it is. I'm going down this path. And he emailed back and said that the best 2 days of running your own website are the day you start it and the day you close it.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I tell you what, I understand where he's coming from on that one. It has been a long, strange ride, but I'm just thrilled for you, Bill. And I just think, man, the two of you guys working together is going to benefit us all, and I'm just really excited about it. Speaking of benefiting us all, that's the idea of this podcast. Again, for people on the program here is recording it live. When we do these A2As, the reason we use GoToWebinar is because it allows the listener to submit questions directly to the guest in real time. We'll get to all the build-up questions in a minute. We already have four or five in queue. But to get started, though, like I said, there's no better time than the present to have you come in and visit with us, Bill. The world is crazy, from Greece to China to the BRIC summit that's currently going on. I mean, there's so many things happening. But I want to start first, though, with this idea of the paper price and what I thought was a physical floor to the paper price that we found late last year that just got violated in silver this week. We'll see where it closes tomorrow. But gold is hanging tough. And we've had these stories this week, these anecdotal stories about retail shortages. And, you know, the mint is not going to produce anymore. We're not going to take any more orders, at least for
until August.
For silver goes till August. I just thought you've got such a vast network of connections and people you know. I just thought I'd see if there's any extra color you could add on this whole paper physical price connection and retail supply and physical supply. I mean, what are your thoughts on where we stand here this moment?
Well, as an overview, we saw the paper price crack to new lows. And on the very same day, the U.S. Mint comes out and says, we're suspending sales and we won't take any more orders until August. Now, they would only do that for one of two reasons. A, they can't get the silver to do it, or B, the demand is too high and they can't crank out coins fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Either of those situations does not fit with a low and crashing price. Neither of those. The other thing is, when you're talking about the physical market, you said that the floor was broken. Maybe the floor wasn't broken, because if you remember back in 2008, 2009, when silver went from, what was it, $23 and traded all the way down to $8, you couldn't buy any silver for under $15.
Yeah, that's true.
Real silver to get it delivered. You couldn't get it for under $15. And you had to wait, in some instances, a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, with reputable dealers, you know, not the Tolvings of the world that take your money and go out of business. And they eventually did get their silver, but they were paying $15 for it. And I think what you've seen the last couple of days is, I think you've seen premiums start to inch up.
Yep.
And not fully reflect a drop in the paper price. So I do believe they're at a, from a physical standpoint, they're out of floor.
Yeah, there is some limit. That's kind of what we've talked about here in the past. There's some limit as to how far the paper price can go, because if physical deliveries aren't made at the paper price loses any legitimacy that it had left.
Right, it loses credibility.
Yeah. Well, and so, but anyway, so you're also seeing, so you're also hearing about some of these. I guess fits some physical tightness, that type of thing, through your contacts too.
Yeah, I had a dealer call me yesterday and said, "Tell me he's out. He's out of all products." And he was told by his suppliers that it would take at least 1 week, maybe 2 weeks, before he got filled. Now, I don't know who his suppliers are or what his supply chain is, but
yeah. You
know, that's an anecdotal. A smaller coin dealer saying he's out.
Well, and again, it lends, like you said, what do you actually have to pay to get it in your hands? And that's reflected in those premiums?
That's the price of silver.
Yeah, exactly.
COMEX is not the price of silver. COMEX hasn't been the price of silver for quite a few years, because, I mean, look at Eagles. The mint is charging, what, $2, $2.25, something like that, over the spot price. Well, that amounts to, what, 12, 13, 14% premium over spot. It doesn't cost them 12, 13, 14% to mint.
Right, right. Exactly. Hey, I'll give you one more.
And you have your markup by your coin dealers. So now you're talking, you know, $2.50, $3. Now you're talking big markups, up to 20%.
Yeah,
So which is the real price?
Right.
The one to get the silver in your hand, or what the Jamokes on the COMEX tell you it is?
I'll give you one more, Bill. I mentioned this in yesterday's podcast for anybody that's listening to us right now. You heard this stat yesterday, but I monitor every month the delivery patterns on the COMEX. Delivery pattern, like there's actual delivery being made, but nonetheless, I monitor this just to see how many, you know, end up just selling for cash and, you know, versus the open interest when the delivery month first started. When I saw this yesterday, I even sent it off to Ted Butler and just frankly, just to get his opinion on it as well. And even he said, boy, that is quite unusual. And what I mean is on contract expiration day, back on the 29th of June, there were 2,700 July silver contracts still open. At the close of business the next day, first notice day, when you had to have full margin in your account to be able to continue to hold one of those contracts, the open interest up to 2,100. Already in July, that contract has delivered 2,700 and change, and there's still 900 contracts of open interest. Just
right. That is showing immediate demand.
Exactly. 2 days ago, the open interest in the July contract, as it is in delivery, rose by 400 contracts. That's two million ounces. Yeah, that somebody stepped up, put up $30 million to jump the queue and get immediate delivery.
Right.
Another bit of anecdotal evidence, but something that certainly has to be watched.
Yep. I agree.
One other thing I wanted to ask you before we start getting everybody else's questions. And remember this, the format, we kind of jump around a little bit from topic to topic. I just wrote this morning about this is just so crazy what goes on in the world these days and how different it is from even 10 years ago, much less 20, 30 years ago when you and I were both in the retail stock brokerage business. And I think, you know, like a frog in a boiling pot, the changes accumulate so dramatically that all of a sudden it just becomes like the new normal. I mean, and today stock markets are rebounding worldwide because the communist Chinese made selling stocks illegal.
Right.
And subject to arrest. And somehow this is making stocks, that bit of news makes stocks go up in New York. So I just, as kind of a different kind of esoteric question, did you ever think about how different this is versus 20, 25 years ago? And just how odd the financial world is compared to what it used to be like?
Well, just a non-news day today would have caused a crash 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's how abnormal our normal has become.
And when you watch this on a daily basis, do you ever just kind of sit back and just scratch your head and think, how in the world? I mean, how did we get into this and how are we ever going to escape?
We got into it through corruption, and the escape will be a complete collapse of the financial system globally and a reset of asset pricing, values, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right then. I'm going to use that as a segue to the first question that I had emailed to me. And this one actually came in earlier today. This comes from a turdite by the name of Scott, who wanted to know when this currency reset and happens and everything else does finally blow up, where do you think wealth and money will be made? Meaning, like, what industry and sector? Fortunes are going to be lost, but fortunes will also be made too. And Scott says, I recognize that precious metals will do well, but where else? Where else do you think where will money flow that people will actually make money?
That's a good question. It's a tough question. I do think that your basic products, food, utilities, things like that, capital will be attracted. And I say capital will be attracted because if everything else has crashed and what's left is looking for a safe haven, you know, utilities, necessities, those are the basics of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, first and foremost, I believe gold and silver are going to carry your wealth from here to whatever the new system looks like or whatever it is.
Right, right.
And on your way, you probably will have to barter a few silver coins to do it. But I do think that just getting back to the basic of basics is probably not a bad idea.
I'll give you over the 4th of July holiday, I was spending some time with my buddy Sweetness and his family, and he lives in Nebraska, which for people around the world, you know, big farming and ranching state out in the middle of nowhere. And he was telling me about a cousin of his that called him up and wanted him to invest in some farmland in the middle of the state, irrigated farmland. Okay, so that kind of makes the price even higher. But it's now up to $10,000 an acre.
Yeah, you cannot turn a profit. You can't grow anything and turn a profit at $10,000 an acre.
That might be a bubble. That might be too high. But nonetheless, I think that's kind of the tangible, real asset kind of thing that you're talking about in a sense. No?
Yes and no. To have the capacity to process, you know, the businesses that actually process foods,
mm-hmm.
That I believe would be, you know, compared to a $10,000 per acre farm, be more likely to be able to turn a consistent profit on processing. And you obviously, you got to look around at farmland, you know. Farmland in one state might be $1,500, $2,000 an acre, and another state might be $10,000 an acre. You've got to figure out, based on food pricing, whether or not you can turn a profit.
Yeah.
And I suspect at $10,000 an acre, you're above that number, whatever the number is.
He wasn't going to do it. I told him, I said, you know, that might be getting a little steep. But like, again, I guess to answer in the end Scott's question, what industry and sector, I mean, you're talking more essentials than anything else, you know,
right,
stuff.
Essentials,
that,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Then the next two questions, and I guess the other two questions that I had that were emailed to me, both have to do with Greece. Can we go there for a minute?
Sure.
It's lovely there this time of year, I understand.
But you got to bring cash with you.
Lots of it. And don't try to take any back out.
Right.
All right. So we're going to have, you know, I don't know, you know, how many times have we had the final summit, the final deadline over the last 5 years? But apparently we're having the final summit, the final deadline this weekend. So from Danforth, what are your thoughts? I mean, if Sunday comes and the Globex reopens and the currencies are trading and Greece is that there's no deal and
right.
Greece is talk about issuing drachma or parallel currencies or IOUs, and they're bankrupt and all that kind of stuff. What's going to happen this time, Bill?
Well, let me tell you first what I think Greece should do for Greece. You know, everybody is prognosticating what they might do, what would be the ramifications. My opinion is Greece should go full bore Iceland. They should default. They should go back to a drachma at whatever fair currency cross rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they should exit the Eurozone because they have natural trading partners to the east.
Yep.
And you've got this new Silk Road being built up. And the east is not, I mean, they're not a broke entity. The west is a broke entity. The Eurozone is a broke entity. So if they were to leave, yeah, everything would collapse and they'd go back to square one and you start over. But Iceland did that. And guess what? It worked.
Certainly worked better than had they stayed in the, you know, Eurozone and all that kind of stuff.
Right, because they have a gigantic anvil around their neck. And
right.
I think they should just walk away. Now, interestingly, Ambrose Evan Pritchard
mm-hmm.
wrote the other day that Tsipras called the referendum fully expecting a yes vote.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that too.
Now, think about that. So he expected a yes vote, and what was he going to do? He was going to go hat in hand to the Eurozone and say, with his head hanging low, saying, okay, we'll accept whatever you impose on us. So he was like a Trojan horse or a plant to throw the Greek people under the bus. But the cradle of democracy, Greece, stood up. I mean, what was it? Last year, Scotland could have broken away from England.
Yeah.
Did they? No, they didn't. But in Greece, it was overwhelming. And I think if he cuts any deal that kicks this can down the road, the Greek people are going to explode.
Yeah, they're going to throw
him out. He'll be lynched.
Yeah.
He'll be lynched in the town square, and you will see outright rioting and destruction.
So we'll be right back to, I mean, they will have kicked the can again, but not as far. You know, it's like the amount, it's like they always talk about the less bang for your buck for QE and all that kind of stuff. It's like every time you kick the can, it goes a shorter distance.
Right. And you also have to ask the question, and I think you said somebody mentioned derivatives earlier. When is this called a default?
Well, that was the next question from that I had emailed in from Fred. Because the ISDA
is already a default. They defaulted. They didn't pay.
Right.
We have another date, I think July 26th, they owe $3.5 billion. So are two defaults a default?
So
is it three defaults?
So if you write a credit, or if you buy a credit default swap, is it in the hope? You don't even want it to pay off? I mean, it's like, okay, I know we bought this for insurance, but we know that if it pays off, it's going to set off the daisy chain and the whole world's going to fall apart. So we're just going to write this off.
They're typically used to offset other positions. They're also used in speculation. It's like fire or homeowner's insurance you buy on your next door neighbor's house and you start throwing matches over the fence.
Well, and I guess, and I think maybe we've answered this question, but Fred's ultimate question was, if there's never going to be a default declared by ISDA, then won't that in a sense, and again, I probably not, but won't that in a sense force rates higher? Because you're buying the Greek debt in this instance at whatever it was, 5%, 2%.
Without insurance.
And yeah, and then you buy insurance because you think, well, I'll at least buy this credit default swap to help me with the risk I'm taking. But I would never have taken that risk if it wasn't 15%. So in a sense,
right.
Doesn't that drive your rates higher?
And now you're naked, and you have to sell you have to sell the position.
And so
that'll create a margin call on its own. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I do. And does it beggar more QE then? Because there's at least
exactly.
In the Eurozone, because there's got to be somebody buying the stuff up from everybody that's selling it.
Right, because they can't price it on their they can't price the credit default swap at a level to offset the losses in the bonds themselves. If the derivatives market comes to be known as it's all worth zero, because none of it will ever be paid.
Right, right.
And oddly, if you think about this, the notional value of all the derivatives outstanding, if you take the notional value, and that is what would need to actually change hands in the event of everything default.
Right, right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
There, if you add up every stock, every bond, every piece of real estate, every grain of rice and grain of sand on the planet Earth, they don't equal $1.4 quadrillion. So what I'm saying is there's the money doesn't even exist. The wealth doesn't even exist to pay the derivatives off.
So in the end, will there ever be a default declared ever again?
It won't be declared, but it'll be known.
But I mean,
everything's going to default.
But declared in the sense where those things pay, where the insurance policy, the credit default swap actually pays off.
There might be one or two that kicks it off, but once that starts, everything defaults.
Yeah.
Everything paper. My mentor has said this years ago, and back in 2008, 2009, everything is worth nothing. And what he's talking about is paper. Everything paper is worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a Ponzi scheme based on debt. And now we're to the point where you've got sovereigns all over the world who have hit the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
They can't put more debt on.
Yeah.
And Ponzi schemes, you have to have new investors coming in constantly to keep the Ponzi scheme from collapsing.
Right. Right.
And credit, the issuance of new credit, that was your new investors, so to speak. And now that credit can't expand anymore, there's no more new investors. It's over. The Ponzi is beginning to collapse now.
You know, that's one thing that we just don't bring up often enough, you know, that people need to ponder and get their arms around it. How all of these supposed assets that people are carrying as assets,
their liabilities,
are liabilities and debt. They're not assets, but
exactly.
All right. Now that does lead me to one more question before I've got, gosh, I must have 8 or 10 in queue, so I got to speed up here. But what's your opinion on this OCC report that came out a week ago about the huge, I mean, what, 1,700% surge in the
right.
commodity derivative exposure?
Well, we don't know whether they're long or short. Judging by what's happened to the price of gold and silver, you would think that somehow it's short because they put pressure on the paper pricing. But just to put it in perspective, J.P. Morgan's increase of over $3.5 trillion in gold, there's at today's price, total global production is just under $100 billion per year. That's 35 years worth of production put on their books in 90 days.
What does that mean? I mean, I'm just trying to, I can't, the problem I'm having with it, Bill, is, I mean, it's now it's not a typo. The OCC has come out and said, no, this is the actual numbers. Because I thought this is so outrageous. It almost has to be a typo, but it's not. And so I'm trying to get the action. I'm trying to get my arms around the significance of it. I mean, because I mean, what is going on behind the scenes, I guess is what I'm getting at.
That we can't know because we don't know whether it's long, short, who are the counterparties. We don't know. The only thing I can tell you is it's fraudulent. I know it's fraudulent because you're talking about 35 years of global gold production put on in 90 days.
And why now? I guess that's what I'm getting at, Bill. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is or long or short, but
I believe to collar the price of metal. I believe it was to collar the price and to keep it from reflecting reality, because if the price of gold and silver reflected reality at much, much higher prices, then that doesn't jibe with 0% interest rates, does it?
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that the Western world is seemingly out of gold that it can ship east, you know.
It would bank.
All right, let me dive right in. Like I said, I got a bunch of them, so we'll try to – you've already been very generous with your time, and we're probably at least 25 minutes into this. So I'm going to just jump right in and remind you this questions are going to kind of skip around a little bit.
That's fine. No problem.
And anybody that wants to add questions to the queue, just type your question into the dialogue by the questions tab on your control panel. First one comes from Patricia. You know, we all talk about, you know, the history of gold confiscation, all that kind of stuff. And but that's not necessarily Patricia's question. Patricia is more concerned with the idea that the U.S. government would impose some kind of windfall profits tax if gold is suddenly recognized to be, you know, $5,000 or $50,000 an ounce. What, you concerned about that? What do you think the likelihood of that is?
That's very possible. And if that were to occur, that gives you a reason to go out and look at some of these completely beaten down and beaten up mining companies that have gold in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're talking about a stock, and they can't say, oh, well, this industry in stocks has this capital gains, and that industry has those capital gains.
Yeah, you'd like to think they wouldn't do that. You're right.
I don't see how they – well, who knows? I mean, the Constitution means nothing anymore.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe they could, but that's my thought process is if you're worried about that, take some of your capital and sprinkle it around in these things that are basically free.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Vic has a question that is similar to what you and I were discussing before we got started. Vic, first of all, says he greatly appreciates and respects your work. Just
Thank
wondering,
you, Vic.
Wondering if you ever have bad days too, where you feel like every day is Alice in Wonderland and your head is just spinning because things are just so upside down.
Everyone does, of course. But you just have to go back, and it's math. 2 + 2 will always equal 4. And you just have to go back. I mean, I've scratched my head. I started building gold and silver positions in 1997. Many of you won't remember this name. Harry Bingham was he was actually the biggest money manager in the world in 1980. He managed the International Investors Fund for Van Eck. And I used to talk to him 2, 3, 4 times a week. And from 96 on, we both believed that gold was being manipulated. If you put enough anecdotal evidence together and you do the logic, think of it this way. What is more valuable, $1,160 $1 bills in one hand or an ounce of gold in the other hand?
Yeah.
What does it cost to make those $1,160 bills versus what does it cost to make that ounce of gold? The ounce of gold is at the cost of production or even below. You know that gold in the West is scarce. We've been shipping it to the East. Just fall back on your logic and trust that your logic is true, because it is true. I mean, that's the best way to get through a bad day, is just to understand that, yeah, this is Alice in Wonderland, and the reality that's being painted for you is complete bull.
It's like your old co-worker at Miles Franklin, Andy, you used to talk about economic Mother Nature.
Right.
And she ultimately...
Now, he's one who gets fired up, though.
He does.
Yeah.
He's a fun guy to talk to. All right. Larry wants to know, this basically gets to your short-term price thoughts. You know, here at TFMR, we've been talking about a physical floor for gold at about $1,150.
Okay.
Silver around $1,550 for, gosh, going back to November. What do you think? Is there, I mean, do you see it the same way? Do you think there's a chance they could just drive paper considerably further down from here?
I got a quick answer for you. A, it doesn't matter. B, I don't care. And C, I know what the ending is. And if you know what the ending is, then who cares?
That's right. I agree completely.
They're doing you a favor. They're subsidizing your being able to purchase metal, mining shares, etc., at way below what they're really worth. So buy them and say thank you very much and tuck them away.
Yeah, I mentioned this just a couple of days ago to everybody. You know, I mean, it'd be fun to kind of stand on your desk and thump your chest and say, ha ha, I told you all, look what's happening. You know, because we hate seeing the manipulators and, you know, and the criminals win. But at the same time, I mean, really, we should be grateful for all of this extra time to prepare for what is coming.
They mathematically cannot win in the end.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Steven wants to know your thoughts on all of the electronic shenanigans of yesterday, from the New York Stock Exchange to United Airlines to the Wall Street Journal to Zero Hedge. You think this is all connected, or do you think, no, it's all just, you know, there's nothing to see here. Move along.
That's a great question. I'm glad somebody asked it, because if they didn't, I did want to talk about this. I'm halfway done writing an article on that. And there, in my mind, I spoke with Jim at length on this yesterday. And in my mind, there's only three possible scenarios. A, they were not connected. They were honest-to-goodness glitches. And I highly doubt it. I mean, it's just too many. And you can also add problems with the switching system with the New York subway system yesterday, too.
Oh.
I don't know if you had heard about that.
I didn't see that one. Okay, that's five.
Yeah, so that's another one. If you noticed yesterday on CNBC, they immediately, within 10 or 15 minutes, were saying, nope, this is just a glitch. This is not you know, it has nothing to do with United Airlines, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so there's scenario one. Scenario two, is it possible that China believes, and if you remember a week or two back, Morgan Stanley was named, and if you want to call it blamed, for topping and rolling over their market. I do believe that we are in an East-West war, a dollar versus the rest of the world war. Is it possible that the exchange, that all of this was hacked and it was a trial run or something coming from China? I believe that's a possibility.
Yeah.
The third possibility, and this is the one that, that Jim believes most likely, the way he explained it to me was, you've got plunge protection teams all over the world trying to hold things up. And they knew yesterday they opened down 200 plus points and knew they weren't going to be able to hold it. And he said to me, if I was chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, I'd run upstairs and pull the plug out of the wall.
Basically what the Chinese did overnight.
Right. The Chinese did it publicly.
Yeah.
We did it. Oh, it was a glitch.
Yeah.
Now, my personal thoughts are it's part two and part three, or B and C, whatever.
Right, right.
I do believe that we are in an economic slash financial war, and I believe they pulled the plug. And also, as an offshoot of answer C, we know that plunge protection teams exist all over the world. Japan openly does it. China openly did it. Mr. Draghi says, whatever it takes, we'll do.
Yep.
And in the U.S., it's law based on an executive order signed by Reagan back in 1988. So we know there's plunge protection teams all over the world. Once these, and this was one of the points I was talking with Jim about, once these plunge protection teams, once it spills over and crosses borders, then what you have is you've got plunge protection teams actually fighting each other. Because think about it, in the currency markets, if they're trying to support the euro and we're trying to support the dollar,
it's
the Fed versus the ECB, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right.
So there's my thought process on what happened yesterday and what is to come.
All right. Oh, boy. There's still a lot of questions here. I better speed up. This one, if I ever get you something that's not really in your wheelhouse, feel free to decline the question.
If I don't know the answer, and I've been this way my whole life, if I don't know the answer, I'm not going to blow smoke at you because nobody has all the answers.
I don't know if this is in your wheelhouse or not, but Rob wants to know. He says most of his gold and silver is vaulted in Singapore with gold money and hard assets alliance. Just wondering how you feel about vaulting in Singapore and if you have any advice on those particular companies or any thoughts on those companies.
I don't know on those particular companies. I know Jim favors Singapore. I think it's still feasible to store in non-bank vaults in Switzerland. You can even look at Vienna through DAS Safe, which is you can do that anonymously. You can contact me somehow, and I have a route through Miles Franklin to their Brinks storage up in Montreal. That's also a non-bank vault. It's important that it's not a bank so that the banking commissioner can't come in and say, throw the vault open.
Right, right.
So.
All right. This next one comes from Mike. This kind of draws upon your old retail experience almost to a little bit. Bill.
Okay.
Mike says he's new to gold and silver, wants to know where he can find out more information on how the gold and silver options markets work. Got any help on that one?
I guess my answer would be don't do it. And the reason being, you're trading in the paper markets and let's say you win big, you win huge. You know, you're long contracts in gold, your long contracts in silver, and you win huge. And you cash out, and the system collapses, and you got dollars.
Yeah.
Okay? Or another scenario is they knock the paper price down further, and they force majeure.
Right, right.
So they clean up the paper game at ridiculously low prices, and then the next day gold and silver take off and you don't have any.
Right, exactly.
I would stay out of the paper markets. If you're going to do it, if you're going to do gold and silver, buy the physical stuff, have it delivered into your own hands. And the other option is look at gold and silver mining companies and have those certificates either sent out to direct registration or hold the certificates yourself, because if your brokerage house goes under, it may be 5 years before you can even get at your shares.
Or, you know, I'll offer one more that, frankly, we don't talk. I don't talk about enough. But, I mean, if you're sitting on a lot of gold and silver, say you got 100 ounces of gold, you know, and you've got it vaulted somewhere, you've got it, you know, at the bottom of your local lake, and you're worried about the paper price, well, I mean, for God's sake, call Jim Comiskey, call some futures broker, commodities broker, and buy yourself a put.
Right.
You know, and if the price goes down, you're going to make a boatload of money, and you can take all that money and buy even more physical metal. So don't just think you know, you're sitting there with your thumb in your rear end at the mercy of the, you know, the paper gods. I mean, there's things, proactive things people can do. Jill wants to know, and I think I remember Jim kind of talking about this a little bit a year or two ago. Jill just wants to know what your thoughts are of this whole FOA and FOFOA. You know,
the what?
FOA and FOFOA, you know, friend of another and friend of another, you know, and the free gold stuff.
Yeah, I have no idea who they are. The thought process is, we'll call it 99% correct. There's no real flaws in their thought process. The problem, that extra 1%, is it's almost become a religion to some people, and gold is not a religion.
Yeah.
Gold is real money. Gold is God's money. So yeah, if you want to say it's religious from that standpoint, yeah. But gold itself is not a religion.
I think, Bill, some people, where they diverge is, you know, these free gold people all think silver's worthless. You know, it's no more valuable than copper.
Yeah, that's completely wrong, because I can make a case where gold and silver should trade very close to par.
You
take 10 ounces of silver out of the ground versus one for every 1 ounce of gold they take out of the ground. But all the gold that's ever been produced, almost all of it, is still above ground. A lot of the silver that's been produced are sitting in junk heaps,
yeah,
you know, in computers and cars,
yeah,
and you name it. And for silver, you have all sorts of medical,
yeah,
technological,
yep,
energy, solar, et cetera, uses, and those are expanding every day. So a 71 to ratio, anybody who thinks that silver's worthless and gold is it, is wrong. I think silver's going to go at least a 15 to 1. So there's a fourfold better move for you in silver than in gold.
Well, and people, that, I mean, they're ignorant of history. Silver has a much longer history of being used as a monetary metal than gold.
Right. The Chinese were the first.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you're completely ignorant of history to say, oh, that's never going to be a monetary metal again. And hell, maybe Hugo, Salinas Price, and Max Kaiser were headed back to Greece to try again here, like they did in 2012. I mean, maybe the Greece will surprise everybody.
Silver drachma.
Yeah. I mean, they don't own any now. They'd have to convert some gold probably to do it, but nonetheless. That's a whole, we're too late in the podcast to go down that road. Anyway, all right. Ned wants to know, not Ned Naylor Leyland, a different Ned.
Okay.
What is your concept on the whole reality of a global currency reset? I mean, this is something you're expecting, I suppose.
It's coming. Absolutely, there's going to be a reset. If you go to bed one Friday and wake up on a Monday and dollars were 6-1 versus yuan and you wake up and they're 1-1, well, what happened? You just lost 80% of your purchasing power.
Yeah. You know, there's a, I still have several questions in queue. I'm just kind of burning through them real quick.
Yeah, no,
wanting us to go back to that OCC report. You know, and again, we don't know who the counterparties are and we don't know if, you know, who's long and who's short. I mean, could it be that they've just, I mean, I guess a possibility we never know, but could they just be taking opposite sides of each other's trades? They being
Very
Citi
possible.
And JP Morgan.
Very possible. And they trade back and forth to each other and end up, you know, they push the price one way or the other. That is very possible.
Yeah. All right. Here, Carl, just wondering if his concern is the Chinese are the main PM accumulators and they're the ones, like they've used to do in the commodity markets all the time, they're the ones suppressing the paper price so that they can accumulate as much as they can, which is what we all should be happy about in a sense because we're doing the same thing. Do you think they have the ability to just continue doing that? Or what are your personal thoughts? I guess I'll just extend Carl's question. Do you think the Chinese, just as you put it all together yourself, think they're close? What do you think of this SDR thing that's coming later this year? And do the Chinese have in excess of 10,000 metric tons now and they're ready to forge forward with some type of currency backing?
I can show you on the back of a napkin 10,000 metric tons. Easy. Since 2009, they've accumulated at least 10,000 metric tons. I do believe that they will become a part of the SDR. I don't know how important the SDR is going to be. Maybe it's all important. Maybe it's of little importance. I don't know. To answer your question of the Chinese, very well may be on the short side. That's possible. They may have cut a deal.
Right.
And allowed the U.S. to pressure prices. That's possible. But the final answer is it will only go on as long as we can supply gold.
Mm-hmm.
Once we can't supply it and deliver it anymore, it's over. It's
Which gets back to the point of how low can the bullion banks even let price go? Because they're the ones that are first on the hook to try to make the deliveries in London and elsewhere.
Right. It's pushing and pulling at the same time. I mean, the lower they push prices, the more demand they create, which comes from their supply. So the more they push prices lower,
right,
the faster the supply goes away.
Yeah. And like we've talked about, too. I mean, the 650, 700 metric tons of alleged gold that has flown out of the alleged inventory of the GLD.
Right.
You know, and moved to satisfy demand elsewhere. Well, hell's bells. What if that demand comes back for the GLD? Where the hell are they going to get their 700 metric tons?
You know, well, yeah, where are they going to get their 700 metric tons? And this is a theory of Harvey Organ's for quite a while. I tend to agree with it. He said long ago, he said 2 or 3 years ago, that he thought that very close to half or 700 tons was paper.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it funny that we got down to 700 tons and we bounce a little below it,
yeah,
bounce back up, a
and
little
stop.
Below it, bounce back up. How come it's not 500 or 400? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, Jim Willey's talked about that too, that was kind
maybe,
of the critical.
Maybe
thing.
That is the number. Maybe maybe they've already gotten to the bottom of the barrel as far as real metal
is
concerned.
Yeah, scraped it out. All right, I've got two left.
Sure.
What is the end game if central banks around the world are buying stocks to protect their markets? I mean, hell, Swiss National Bank owns $1 billion worth of Apple. I mean, is it conceivable that markets can't go down just because simply there's never going to be enough selling to take them down?
Possible markets can't go down because the currencies are going to collapse and assets will take more currency because they're diluting the currency. So that's possible. You could see a hyperinflation. I mean, look at the Zimbabwe stock market or Argentina or Venezuela or whatever. You see the stock markets go up, but they still are down in real value.
Right. Well, I guess
So yeah, that's possible.
All right, and last question I have, Rob wants to thank you for your time. Just wondering if you have any opinion on this Bitgold idea. You know, that Bitgold just merged with gold money, and it seems like a neat way to save in something other than fiat currency. But just wondering if you had any opinions.
I know James Turk. I respect him, and I know he believes in that Bitcoin or some form of Bitcoin is going to be the money of the future. I personally can't wrap my head around owning whatever Bitcoin is. I don't. What do you call it? A digital?
Yeah. Right.
You know, digital, airy currency. If yesterday didn't do anything at all other than open your eyes a little bit to, hey, wait a minute. If the market's closed or if the internet's down, how do I get my money?
Right.
So I don't know. I may call me a dinosaur. I'd rather have an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver in my hand versus a bank statement that says you own X amount of dollars or
right.
bitcoins or whatever.
In like if Greece hasn't in the pictures out of Greece and the in the stories of 20 euros a day out of your ATM, if that's not enough to open your eyes to what a bank holiday looks like.
Yeah, and they had how many? They have had over a year to do this.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, yes, you have pensioners that have to go get their pension money. Yes, but you're not going to see lines and queues as long as that. You know, people should have gotten the bulk of their capital out, and I think about half of the deposits were taken out.
Yeah.
The other half was still in there. Who in their right mind would have left money in there?
Right, right.
And look at store shelves. Look at how quickly store shelves emptied. Boom, 24 hours, nothing left.
Hey, man, and if again, people, oh, that's never going to happen here. Okay.
As we, mathematically going to happen here, Turd.
And as we incrementally get there, try going to your bank today and even taking $5,000 out in cash and see how that goes over.
Yeah, they're going to ask you why and report you to the FBI or IRS or whatever.
Yep. And if you took out $5,000 a day and tried to go back tomorrow or next week and do it again?
Yeah.
Yep.
They'd keep you there until the authorities came to take you away.
Yeah, yep. All right, my friend, we've reached the end of the queue. That means we've reached the end of the call. However, you don't get to go without the final four.
Oh, here we go.
These are four kind of fun quickies as we head out the door. Just to kind of let people get to know you a little better. Everybody knows you are from Texas, right? I don't think you
Yeah,
can...
I'm from Texas, but not originally. I grew up in Connecticut, played hockey for UConn. I'm a hockey player by trade, and now I ride a horse every day.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I would imagine you could still answer this question. Living in Texas, which college football team in Texas is going to have a better season? A&M, UT, Baylor, TCU?
Who do I want or who do I think?
Yeah, who do you think, I guess, would probably be a better way to phrase it. Who do you like?
Well, I would say probably Baylor.
Yeah. Yeah. They look loaded. All right. Second. Again, this is kind of a Texas question. Have you ever referred to someone as being all hat and no cattle?
Oh, yes.
You know, people say that about me, as a matter of fact. You know, I got that big foam hat.
Or a drugstore cowboy, same thing.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there you go. All right, third. We are about a year away from sorting this out, maybe less. Who will be the Republican nominee for president?
I guess you got to go with the odds and say Jeb Bush. Unfortunately.
Sure, we think that makes it. I've contended for a while that would finally make way for a viable third party candidate.
But then again, I voted for Ross Perot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, the idea of another Bush versus Clinton election, somebody will seize on that by next spring, next winter. And there may be another Ross Perot type candidate, which will probably only just ensure Hillary's election. You know, I'll throw in one more thing. I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump. I mean, I think he's kind of goofy, but he's obviously a brilliant guy. The people that write him off and say that that dude, his what he talks about appeals to millions of people.
Right.
And to think that, you know, they want to ignore that guy and marginalize him, but there's a millions of people out there that hear what he's saying and think that nobody else is going to say it. The idea that he should not a serious candidate is incorrect, in my opinion. Anyway, finally, platinum. I mean, it's down there almost $1,000 an ounce. Do you own any? Would you consider buying any?
No and no.
Fair enough. Oh, well, okay. Now I got
to second no, because if you want to, let's say during a really bad time, you want to sell it, you're going to need to get it assayed. Because the average person is going to look at it and say, that's not platinum.
It's the gold. Hell is this? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Good point. That's an excellent point. All right, my friend. Hey, thank you. Man, this has gone almost a full hour, and I
enjoyed it.
Praying that the recording actually saved this time, because everybody's going to want to listen to it, but at least the group that has played along the whole time, I know, has gotten a lot out of it. And so I just want to thank you again for doing it, Bill. I wish you all the best of luck in your adventures with Santa. And I think he knows we call him Santa. Did I ever explain to you why we call him Santa?
No.
Back when I first found his site, and I turned on my friend Mr. Hyde to the metals and everything about it. Again, about the first site we found was Jim's site. And one day, as we've now found out, it happens all the time, the metals were just getting the crap kicked out of them. And Hyde was already pretty heavily invested in miners and all this kind of stuff. And I'm talking to him on the phone. He says, and who is this Jim Sinclair guy anyway? For all I know, he could be Santa Claus at the North Pole typing on a keyboard.
And so, okay, I didn't know that.
He has always been Santa to everybody here at TFMR. I think somebody told him that once, and he thought that was pretty funny. But you might drop that in on him sometime. Just call him Santa and see what he says. He'll go, you've been talking to Turd again.
I will. But hey, Turd, I appreciate it. Send me a link so I can send this out to our people.
You got it. My pleasure. It would be my pleasure to do it. Thank you so much for your time, Bill. And I'm sure we'll keep in touch and do this again soon.
All right. Thank you, Turd.
Have a great day.